is The Guardian.
I'm Laura Murphy Oates, and this is The Full Story. As the last term of school for 2021 was winding down, the Omicron wave hit, leading to an uncertain summer. Many in the community were left wondering what school would look like in the year ahead.
We're very much from the AHPPC perspective, all my colleagues in the states and territories agree that the most important thing is to get schools back.
During this time, various national leaders have been emphasising how important it is to keep schools open this year.
And that is our objective. We need the schools open. And we need them to stay open. As I told you last week, that if schools aren't open, we could see...
With more than 2 million kids across New South Wales and Victoria returning to in-person learning this week, and COVID-19 cases still in the thousands, today we're looking at the plan to keep these schools open in 2022. It's Monday, the 31st of January. So, Calla, what is the plan for keeping schools open in the middle of an Omicron wave?
Last week, New South Wales and Victoria both announced their back-to-school plans, which they worked on collaboratively, and it's a pretty similar plan for both states.
Calla Wahlquist is a reporter at Guardian Australia.
The New South Wales Premier, Dominic Perrottet, said the two states had collaborated so that the biggest jurisdictions would be in sync, and also because there are so many schools along that Murray River border.
Mm.
So the plan is that both states will provide staff and students with enough rapid antigen tests to facilitate surveillance testing. That'll be two tests a week during the first 4 weeks of term one. So that responsibility will be on the parents to test their own kids and report the result.
What else?
Both New South Wales and Victoria have also increased the number of air purifiers that will be available in schools, although there are problems with that rollout and they're not doing that at the same rate. And both states have also suggested that events like assemblies, sport and excursions will still be able to go ahead in a COVID-safe way.
Mm.
The differences are mainly around the wearing of masks. Masks are mandatory in Victoria for all staff and students in high school, and in primary school it's mandatory for staff and students of grade 3 and above. In New South Wales, masks are only recommended for primary school kids. They're not mandatory.
Mm.
The main change this year that both states have outlined, which is the biggest difference between this year and the last year, is that there will be no contact tracing for students and staff. So schools will not close if a student has attended class while positive, and their classmates will not be considered close contacts and will not have to isolate.
Right. That seems like a really big change, Calla, and I want to dig into that a little bit more. Without contact tracing or closing the school, how will they contain an outbreak if it happens?
Well, we have to remember a big difference is that most kids in high school should have been double vaccinated by the time that school goes back.
Mm.
And kids aged 5 to 12 are also eligible for their first dose. And about almost a third of kids in that age group have had their first dose. So it's a bit different than last year. Hopefully that could reduce the chance of transmission and certainly will have a big impact on the seriousness of disease if kids do catch the virus. So that's a consideration that goes into the decision not to contact trace.
Mm.
But the process this year will be that if a kid is sick, if they are symptomatic with those common COVID symptoms that we know, fever, sore throat, so on, they have to be kept at home. They then do a test, PCR test or a rapid test. And if they are positive, then they have to isolate for 7 days and follow those protocols. Their household also has to isolate for 7 days as well.
Mm.
But kids who shared a classroom with them will not have to isolate. They will be informed by the school that there was a child in their child's class who was positive, told to monitor symptoms. Teachers will also be informed and told to monitor symptoms, but the whole class will not have to isolate. And that decision was made basically because there are so many cases in the community that if you had to isolate an entire classroom every time one kid in a class of 30 tested positive, you'd barely be in school.
I suppose one of the problems that I see with that immediately is that we've seen cases over the summer where RAT tests are only showing up an infection usually about 5 days after exposure. I mean, is it possible that we'll see a situation here where symptomatic kids who are still, you know, returning negative RAT tests will be going to school.
Well, the New South Wales Chief Health Officer, Dr. Kerry Chan, actually addressed this.
But in addition, we're calling upon all parents to ensure that any children with symptoms are not sent to school.
Unless you have an alternative diagnosis, just keep them home.
Get them tested. And even if they've got a negative test on that first day, please keep them home and do a repeat test and only send them back if there's an alternate diagnosis. So, for instance, if they've got hay fever and you're clear that that's the cause.
I can see there might be a lot of sick days with this advice here. I mean, if a kid has a sniffle, that's kind of once a week for some kids or some families, right?
Yeah, it's going to be really difficult. And this is something that a lot of teachers I spoke to raised as a big concern. If you had remote schooling, kids could sort of still keep up with the rest of the classroom if they were at home sick. But I spoke to a maths teacher from Sydney who said that she was really worried that, you know, if kids had repeated sick days, you can really get behind very quickly in those key learning areas. And it can take a really long time to catch up. If you miss a foundational skill, that can really impact the rest of your schooling.
Okay, so that's kids. What about if a teacher gets sick? What's the plan?
If a teacher gets sick or tests positive to COVID, then they will have the same requirements as anyone else in that they will be required to isolate for 7 days and members of their household will be required to isolate as well. But National Cabinet has agreed that teachers are counted as essential workers, meaning that they don't have to isolate as a close contact. If my partner was a teacher and I tested positive to COVID, my partner could still attend school, provided that they did not have symptoms and that they had tested negative on a rapid antigen test.
Why would they make that exception? I mean, that seems like a bit of a risk.
The teachers' union would agree with you that it is a bit of a risk, but basically it's because we need to keep schools open. If teachers have to isolate every time they're a close contact, then you're going to have quite a high number of teacher absences to deal with, and that puts a lot of pressure on schools. The teachers' union has expressed concerns that this means that infection could just spread really easily through the school.
Right, because you can see a situation with the Omicron variant where there's tens of thousands of cases being recorded each day, that a lot of teachers might be getting sick and might be getting infected at school as well. I mean, is that a big concern? Is that a likely picture?
Both New South Wales and Victorian governments have flagged that staff shortages, teacher shortages, will be one of the biggest challenges that they face. And some people have warned that school shutdowns could occur in cases where disruptions to staffing made it impossible for classes to continue. Education Department officials in New South Wales have also told administrators it was possible that as many as 20% of staff could be off sick once classes resume. And last week, a New South Wales political team reported that more than 70 public schools across New South Wales had already had staff vacancy rates of 20% or higher in term four last year.
Why so?
Part of this is because there is a long-running teacher shortage, particularly in some smaller and remote schools in New South Wales, but there's also a belief that absences due to COVID is adding to that.
Right. So we might see a whole bunch of teachers off sick with COVID on top of a staff shortage or a staff crisis, as some have called it. What is the plan to keep schools running in that case where many teachers are sick?
Well, the plan is to use a combination of retired teachers, final year student teachers and retired principals and administrators. Both the New South Wales and Victorian state governments have put out calls for teachers in those positions, former teachers, student teachers, to put their hand up and be part of a task force of substitute teachers, basically, that can help fill the gaps. Other states have said that they've got workforces of fully vaccinated substitute teachers on standby. But again, the Education Union is questioning whether there are enough substitute teachers ready and able to go into schools to actually fill this gap. The Victorian Education Minister, James Molino, said that remote learning will be the absolute last resort and classrooms in Victoria will only close down due to staff shortages for the shortest possible period of time, and that will be localised to particular schools. And in New South Wales, the Secretary of the Education Department, Georgina Harrison, said a very similar thing. She said in cases where schools were forced to close, the government would seek to limit the length of the disruptions.
So short closures and just soldier on.
Yeah, basically.
our teachers, parents, and students are feeling about the return to school. So, Keller, with all that in mind, I wonder if we can get into how everyone's feeling about this. I imagine that there's a lot of people who are anxious on all sides, but also a lot of people who are excited just to go back to school. How are people feeling that you've spoken to?
Yeah, it's a real mix of feelings. I spoke to a number of teachers and parents and students, some teachers who are also parents. And overall, no one wants their kids to be at home. Most kids don't want to be at home. People want to be back in the classroom. But they are concerned, particularly if there are vulnerabilities in a household, people who might have a family member who is going through chemotherapy or might be immune compromised. There is concern that kids will bring COVID home from schools, making family members sick.
I mean, what can parents do if they are so anxious about this and they just don't want to send their kids back to school?
So there aren't many options if you don't want to send your kid back to school unless they are already being formally homeschooled. The Guardian has actually reported on a number of cases of parents who have sought permission to keep kids at home and been told by their local education department that they are not allowed to do that and that they must send their child to school unless they have an acceptable excuse.
Why? What kind of reasons have they given for this?
We've seen advice from New South Wales Health that says that there is a quite limited risk in students bringing COVID from school into their homes and that exemptions would only be granted in cases where a medical practitioner explicitly advises that the student should not attend class. And that seems to be for the student's medical conditions. There doesn't appear to be much allowance made for family members' medical conditions.
Right, so the policy is that kids with serious conditions might get an exemption because of the risk of them also contracting COVID, but not kids with parents who have serious conditions. Those kids still have to go to school.
Yeah, in one case reported on by The Guardian, a mother who has a pre-existing health condition received a letter from her school principal because she'd kept her kid away from school for most of last year, and there was a threat of potential court action because of unsatisfactory school attendance.
I mean, that sounds like a pretty extraordinary move, taking a parent to court because they're afraid for their health, essentially, and afraid for the health of their kid as well. What has the New South Wales government and the Department of Education said about these types of moves?
Well, Dominic Perrottet hasn't responded to this case specifically, but he said that it would be...
Let's be clear. I mean, when we talk about parents being concerned, and many parents are anxious, particularly in circumstances where their children may have underlying health conditions, we're certainly not going to be fining parents. I mean, that's ridiculous. Our job,
And in a statement, the Department of Education didn't respond directly to questions about whether parents would be punished for keeping children at home once term resumes due to fear of contracting COVID. But a spokesperson said regular attendance at school for all students was essential to learning and well-being, and that cases in which parents were concerned about their child's attendance would be managed collaboratively in partnership between schools and parents.
Okay, let's move on to teachers. You said you've been speaking to some teachers. How have they felt about the return to school?
But most teachers agree that remote learning is not a long-term solution. It's not the ideal way to conduct a school, but some still have some concerns. So the president of the New South Wales Teachers Association, Angelo Gabrielatos, said the state government should be doing more to protect staff as they return to school. So arguing that mask wearing should be a requirement for anyone in schools in an indoor setting and that teachers should be provided with high quality, you know, P2 masks. Most teachers I spoke to expressed concern about them having to go to work if they had been identified as a close contact of a positive case or sitting in a staff room alongside someone who might be a close contact of a positive case. One person I spoke to, who we'll call Inez, was a teacher and also a parent to two school-age kids. And she said she wants to go back to teaching in person. It's a much better way to teach. But she's concerned that her school has quite a small classroom and that the decision to make teachers who might be close contacts continue to go to work could let the virus rip through the school. And she actually said that when that announcement was made by National Cabinet, that was the moment that her husband suggested that she quit her job because of the risks to her personal health.
I mean, do we know if any other teachers feel the same and are thinking of leaving their job because of this risk?
Some teachers already have. Karen, can you tell me a bit about your situation? Are you still teaching?
No, I made a decision earlier this year to actually, it was at the start of this outbreak, that I wouldn't be doing any more teaching.
One teacher or former teacher I spoke to was a woman named Karen Armstrong.
So I've been a teacher pretty well from the age of about, a little less, so about 25 years, yeah, something like that.
She left teaching in June of 2021 as the Delta wave in Sydney was really kicking off last year. Her husband is also a teacher and he decided to retire early over the summer break because of the coronavirus.
He's officially on long service leave, but it's understood that really he's retiring.
Yeah. Why did you decide to give it up?
Well, the main reasons were that I didn't feel that it was being taken seriously. The government wasn't bringing in, you know, Department of Health, Department of Education just wasn't setting guidelines that were in any way adequate to you know, keep people safe, to keep the teachers safe or to keep the students safe.
So Karen's one of the founding members of an advocacy group called COVID Safe Schools. And she says her big concern is that schools are still not set up to minimise the risk of airborne viruses. Mm. That group is calling on state governments to put in CO2 filters and real-time air filters and air monitoring in all rooms of all schools.
You know, can I just say, we want the schools to remain open. I'm in this for the sake of my children. I don't want my children to have a weird little life kept at home, wrapped up in cotton wool. But by the same token, I expect that when they go to school, they're going to be kept safe and that the schools have seriously done what is needed in a serious way, in a genuine way, to keep them safe.
And she also spoke about how frustrating it was to see the normalisation of teachers having to risk their health to be considered dedicated to their jobs, that if they raise concerns about the health risks from working during a pandemic, that they are seen as not committed teachers.
Mm. It's just a nonsense. I mean, it's also a false dichotomy because, you know, teachers who are speaking out, actually it's not because they don't care, it's because they do care.
She also expressed frustration that the debate seems to have been framed in black and white terms. Either you want all schools shut down or you want to completely open up and let it rip. And she said most people, including herself, sit somewhere in the middle.
You know, I say this as a parent and as a teacher. School is the place where they ought to be. But, you know, that's predicated on the schools preparing themselves. And quite frankly, they have had over a year to prepare themselves. I mean, it was known that it was airborne for 12 months. We want the schools to remain open, but we want them open in a safe way.
So, Kelly, it's a lot of concerns from teachers and parents. Are there solutions that could have been implemented or could still be implemented in the coming school term that they would like to see?
So, can I get you to state your full name and position, please?
Yes, it's Karina Hayfort, Federal President of the Australian Education Union.
Wonderful. Thanks, Karina. Yeah, so the Australian Education Union, their main disappointment is the lack of a national framework for returning to school.
We don't have that, and so we are reliant on the negotiations that have occurred at a state level on things such as surveillance testing. I think we all know that returning to school is not without risk, and the community understands that we do need to prepare for multiple scenarios. It is difficult when we don't have consistent guidelines around the country.
And they're particularly concerned around access to tests, both rapid antigen tests and PCR tests. They said there should be a priority national access for teachers and school communities to tests.
What do you mean by priority national access?
So when they say a priority national testing program, that could work in a variety of different ways. The concern of the union is really just that we don't have an ad hoc testing response. Previously, when we've had large outbreaks at schools, there have been pop-up testing sites, there has been a response that's been determined by state health authorities. And what they're saying is, hey, we really need teachers to know going into the school year what their access to a test will be, how long they might have to wait, whether they will be able to get the testing resources that they need, no matter where they happen to be in Australia, rather than having sort of a two-tiered system where if you're in a major capital city, you might have more access to testing and more access to resources than you might somewhere else.
Right. So just a guarantee that nationally, if you're a teacher, you're going to have access to RAT tests, PCR tests, and be able to get results back quickly and efficiently.
Yeah,
We expect these next few weeks to be difficult for people, but we expect governments to engage in good faith bargaining to ensure the safety of school communities.
So, Calla, at the centre of all this, obviously, are the kids. Each family would feel very differently about going to school, as well as each kid within that family. I'm wondering how much you know about how kids are feeling about the return to school at the moment.
So I've just pressed record. My next question is, and you can say no to this if you're not comfortable, whether you'd be comfortable with us using some of the audio from our conversation in our podcast?
Yeah, that's fine.
That's fine? Okay, great.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, do you want to just tell me your kids' names first?
So I spoke to a family that lives in Melbourne's northwest before school went back.
Majid Mustafa and Malik Mustafa.
Her family is Jimena Riveros and her sons.
Majid is 13.
Yeah.
And Malik is 8.
8. Beautiful.
Mm. And you want me to put you in a speaker or what?
Are you excited about returning to school in person this year?
I don't mind coming back to school. It's nice knowing I'm going to see my friends again. But again, it's a bit worrying seeing that we might go into lockdown before we even start school.
You can answer the question to her, Malik, yeah? What do you think to coming back to school?
A little bit not excited because... Like, I kind of want to go back to school, but not at the same time.
Yep. Is that because you would prefer to be on holidays?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, fair enough.
I wouldn't say they're excited about returning to school because the summer holidays are pretty fun, but they're certainly not excited about returning to remote school. They want to be able to do it in person.
In person. Because it's more easier and you have all the materials to do the work.
How about you?
For me, in school is definitely much better. It's just so much easier and you get to experience, you know, being outside with your friends and one-on-one with the teacher if you have to ask any questions.
Both Majid and Malek already have friends who've had COVID and they're a bit less worried about it now that they've had friends who've had the virus, but they've also already been dodging it all summer holidays. So going back to school and having to sort of be aware of that risk isn't that different to them.
I don't think I'm that worried, but again, there is like a little worry that I might get sick with COVID and then give it on to my family.
They were also so excited that soccer has started back. Majid in particular is a really keen soccer player.
I hope that this year I can just go along with school and do my soccer just pretty normally, unlike having lockdowns and having to worry about spreading COVID or getting COVID. So hopefully this year it's not the same.
That's a good hope.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you all very much for speaking to me. I really appreciate it. It's been great. And I hope that you do get to go to school without any interruptions this year. Particularly, I mean, Year 9 is such a...
That's it for today. Thanks to Calla Walkless for her time. If you want to read more about returning to school during the Omicron wave, you can head to theguardian.com. Calla has a great article called As Australian Students Prepare to Leave COVID Lockdowns in the Past, Teachers Are Frustrated by the Lack of Planning. You can also read reporting from our New South Wales State reporter, Michael McGowan, who's been following the issue over the summer. We'll put some links to those pieces on the Full Story page as well. This episode was produced by Jake Morecambe, Karishma Luthria and Joe Koning, who also did the sound design and mixing. The executive producers of Full Story are Miles Martignoni, Gabrielle Jackson and me, Laura Murphy-Oates. Okay, catch you tomorrow.